Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Don't understand why.
Because our way works great for us.
But it may not work for your clients. That's why Fisher Investments is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor.
So, what do you provide? Cookie-cutter portfolios like the rest of us?
No cookie-cutter portfolios here. Fisher Investments tailors portfolios to meet each client's goals and needs.
But you do sell investments that earn you high commissions, right? And make commissions when you make trades for your clients?
No, Fisher Investments doesn't sell any commission investment products, and we never earn commissions on trades.
So what's in it for you?
Fisher Investments fees are structured so we do better when our clients do better. When it comes to helping clients achieve a comfortable retirement, we're clearly different. Visit FisherInvestments.com to find out why investors like you switch to us. Fisher Investments, clearly different money management.
Investments in securities involve the risk of loss.
The new class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
The 2020 class ranges from the legendary Whitney Houston to the notorious B.I.G. Now I'm in the limelight because I rhyme tight. There's the 1970s hitmakers, the Doobie Brothers. From the 1980s, Depeche Mode. The pulsating sound of Nine Inch Nails. And the British band T-Rex. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Many pets get anxious when their owners leave home, and Spotify's trying to help by making playlists and a podcast for dogs to listen to while their owners are out. The company found nearly 3 out of 4 UK pet owners play music for their animals. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Real travel is life-changing. With Trafalgar, you'll discover the best way to travel and connect with the culture, people, and places you visit. You'll travel with the freedom to discover and the confidence to explore. With over 300 trips on all 7 continents, you get real experiences that you won't find elsewhere. These are just a few of the greatest travel stories you'll ever tell. Save up to 7.5% on trips. Terms and conditions apply. Visit your travel agent or Trafalgar.com. Trafalgar, simply the best.
You're in charge of hiring, and Indeed has solutions, like online skills tests, which let a candidate show that they're the right hire. Indeed will also give you this sticky frog, which will suddenly leap and stick to the face of the perfect hire. Okay, there's no sticky frog. But skills tests, that's a for sure.
See why independent research by Silk Road shows Indeed delivers 3 times more hires than any other job site. Post your next job at Indeed.com/hire and try skills tests for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And back here on the Steve Jones Show as we begin Hour 4, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll get back to Steve in a sec from the mobile Sunbury Motors studio today from Minneapolis. We got Penn State and Minnesota tonight. Men's basketball coverage beginning after our coverage of Shikellamy basketball ends here on WKOK. The main tip-off will be at 9 p.m., but we'll pick up this game after Shikellamy is done later on tonight. And so we have that coming up for you later on here on WKOK. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh, Sidney Crosby, a big debut back after a 2-month layoff due to injury.
An effort tonight from Evgeny Malkin. Tristan Jarry, 20 saves. Crosby to the net, he scores! Sid is back. It's 5-2.
Well, that's the second one tonight that's gone off a Wild defenseman and in behind Dubnyk, and this time off the stick of the captain, Crosby. Who took the McCann feed. He was tripped on the ice, makes the play. Crosby on the backhand. That's appropriate. And Dumba, no chance for Dubnyk. And Dubnyk's got to be shaking his head. I know Boudreaux just did. And for Sidney Crosby, he's back in the goal column.
With Aston Reese, not McCann. Crosby back of the cage to himself, looking, centering pass across, score! Dominic Simon and a brilliant feed from Sidney Crosby.
And Ryan Donato is saying, thanks, coach, because he hasn't seen a move like this before, has he? Crosby goes off the back of the net to himself, uses a pick from Reese, and right across the goal crease to the stick of Dominic Simon. That is mastery by the captain. 87. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And that was our play-by-play call today from AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby with a big return from injury. We'll talk some more about this cheating scandal between the Astros and the Red Sox. Well, of course, our thanks again from Tim Kirch. And now we hear from Jacob Bogage from the Washington Post. He joins Steve right now. How are you?
Oh, good to be with you. And this is important, too.
All right. Thank you so much. As I'm sitting here in my room, literally looking out my room, and I see the Target Center below, and I see Target Field just beyond there, all snow covered. We're going to talk some baseball here. The situation with the Astros and then eventually to the Red Sox, what does this do for Major League Baseball's reputation, and how do you think Rob Manfred has handled all of it?
So the words, when I read Commissioner Manfred's report, the word that I was looking for was integrity. Does he talk about the integrity of the game, or you know, would somebody at home be able to tune into a game and have a logical conclusion that this game is being played fairly on an even playing field, that nobody's breaking the rules? And he does invoke that word. And to me, when I see that, immediately what comes to mind is the steroid era and kind of the crisis the game faced then. Pete Rose and gambling, and then we take it all the way back to the White Sox and the gambling scandal in 1919. This kind of seems overblown, but the way that Major League Baseball is treating this is that it's a threat to the credibility, to the integrity of the game, and that's why the hammer has come down so hard on the Astros, and I think that's why the Red Sox felt they had no choice but to part ways with Alex Cora.
Well, different eras bring with it different challenges, and this is an era where we have extensive use of technology, which is not what they had in 1919 with the Black Sox. The PED scandal, of course, of the 90s into the early 2000s was different and nothing to do with technology, but because of advanced technology, it does open the door for this kind of cheating.
It does, and I think that's why we saw, when I was reporting on this yesterday, I went back to what I'd written literally almost a year ago, where Rob Manfred sent out, these guidelines that reinforced the sign-stealing rules. And, the gist of that was, hey, between the lines, have at it, But, the National League banned what they called mechanical sign-stealing in 1962. That was basically the only rule. As more and more technology came into the game, that was the only rule that governed sign stealing until last offseason, when Rob Manfred says we can't put cameras in center field in a way that can see the catcher's signs, that you can't use the replay room. But Major League Baseball is going to have to take a even more of a look at this, because even if, let's say I can't see the signs during the game. What's to stop me during my film study of going back and looking at that angle and seeing if I can decode it then and seeing if there's a tip or a tell? There's larger questions that have to be answered about the way technology integrates into the game, especially when we're in an era where analytics are king and it's important to have these technological devices in the dugout.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any question when you look at the. I mean, replay is certainly a part of the game right now. But Jacob, is it something? Does Major League Baseball need to, as a result, dial back on replay as a possibility because, now would that be an overreaction?
I think it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's out. We're using it. I mean, are you really going to be able to go to managers and say the resources you had to make these decisions that are deciding that in some cases, you know, contribute to deciding ball games, we're going to take those resources away from you? I think then you'd have teams trying to subvert that process and, you know, find more resources to make replay decisions. So I don't know if you can put that toothpaste back in the tube. I do think there are analog solutions to these problems. I mean, Rob Manfred, in those guidelines, the things he said were, if you think that you can use the dugout phone to talk about this kind of stuff, well guess what? We're going to tap your phones and monitor your conversations. If you think you can use the replay room to transmit this kind of stuff, well, then we're just going to put an observer in the replay room to make sure you're not doing it. I think that's the answer that Major League Baseball will lean towards, is more oversight, and that oversight will literally be human presence and analog solutions.
I agree with you. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. I completely understand that. I've always felt, though, that Major League Baseball needed to take better control of the replay situation. I've always felt that they should put an umpire in the booth with technology people and keep the teams out of it and actually run it themselves in the booth at each ballpark. I know it's a little bit more of an expense, but I think it takes the teams out of it. Because, look, teams need technology, too. In other words, let's keep it with Alex Cora. If J.D. Martinez wants to analyze his swing, he wants to look at video. So, I mean, that's useful, I mean, to him as a player. But I felt that when it came to the replay, that Major League Baseball needed to have complete control over replay in their own booth, their own way, with the teams out of it.
I don't think we're far from that or something close to it, especially putting an umpire in the press box or in a replay room somewhere that's maybe on site and not in New York, especially when we see the electronic strike zone that's going to make its way to Major League Baseball. I've been told by sources perhaps in the next 3 years that you don't just want to have some software engineer sitting up, because that's what they had in the Atlantic League when they tested this. I mean, I went to these games and they have a software engineer monitoring the system. I think you probably want somebody with baseball knowledge there as well, especially someone with knowledge of the strike zone, to see if the system's malfunctioning or just to govern it, on their own. And once you put an umpire in front of a computer screen and give them some role in the game, especially on site, I think Major League Baseball will see how advantageous that could be for replay or other officiating duties.
Is it interesting to you that no players were faced any suspension or fines out of this?
I think Rob Manfred made a good point, which is we're 2 years removed. Well, 2020 season, we're 3 years removed. We're about to be. Players are everywhere. I mean, the core of the Astros is together. But, you know, like Carlos Beltran hasn't been punished. Well, that's an interesting question. What are you going to do with him? Because he was a player, but now he's with a franchise that's totally not involved in this. And he's a manager. So I think you almost have to look at the most removed, the player that's most removed, which would be arguably Carlos Beltran, and say, if we can't figure out something that is fair to him and is fair to his new franchise, then it's not fair to do something to other guys who have had, who are in longer term contracts, or who haven't moved, or who have been sent down, or whatever that is. I think he makes a good point that it's that might be a little too fraught, but understandably, fans aren't going to like that. I mean, there's no way to make everybody happy when it comes to disciplining the players.
Would it be a safe assumption Alex Cora is probably done, but because A.J. Hinch was a guy that was against this but didn't do enough about it, is the door open to maybe him somehow rehabilitating himself to being a bench coach or something like that down the road a few years from now?
So I thought about this yesterday, and someone asked me about this yesterday. I actually think it might be just as hard for A.J. Hinch.
Okay.
When this first came out, or actually, I don't even think it was this. It was when they were playing the Indians in the pennant series, I think, in 2017. And they had some back and forth with the Indians about sign stealing. And A.J. Hinch gets up on the podium and gives this really erudite, thought-out answer about how, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and, you know, this is not a one-series conversation, and it's something we care about, and you have to play the game the right way, and this isn't playing the game the right way, these accusations. And I mean, he portrays himself as this figure of, I get it. And then after the Brandon Todman stuff, where people came out and said, God, the front office of the Houston Astros is a frat house gone wild. I mean, it is, you know, an animal house, and it's toxic, and the culture is bad, and it's misogynistic. And then A.J. Hinch, the very next day, gets up on the podium and says, you know, something to the effect of baseball's for everyone, and, you know, if this is true, it's unacceptable. And, you know, again, portrays himself as kind of the new era of baseball leadership, which is tolerant and accepting, and pro-diversity and pro-women, not just in the locker room, but in every aspect of the game. And then this happens, and you find out that not only did he know about it, he didn't do anything to stop it. And I think because he had portrayed himself with this really positive image and had taken these really progressive stances, to find out that something was amiss the entire time could be pretty damaging to him going forward.
One final question, I'll let you go. What does this do currently to baseball's image, in your opinion? And what does the reaction of Rob Manfred mean to baseball's image moving forward?
Manfred's in a tough position because it's kind of you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And I apologize.
Agreed.
I shouldn't have said that on the radio.
No, I agree with you, though. You're right.
Because if he does nothing and tries to underplay it, you know, he's going to get slammed that way. And the bigger deal he makes out of it, the more people wake up to the fact that, oh my God, did this affect a World Series? You know, and I've got people commenting and emailing me about my stories saying they need to strip two World Series titles. That would be an existential crisis for baseball. You will never get fans back if you do that. But in theory, is it the right thing to do? I don't know. So Manfred spoken, he was pretty harsh to a select group of people. I think a couple months into the season, we will have moved on. But he's got to walk this tightrope of, how vocal should I be about it? I have to be vocal enough that people feel like I am holding folks accountable, but not so vocal that this stays in the headlines and it becomes something that when somebody flips on a game at home, they think in the back of their heads, is this game being played with integrity?
Thanks so much for your time. I know there's another really important story you're working on, and I want to make sure you get to that and give it the justice it deserves, because it's unfortunately a tragedy you're working on. So thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be with you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and there's a tough story he's working on. I'm not going to get into it. I mean, you'll read about it later in the post, but unfortunately it deals with a death of a young student-athlete in their area down in D.C. All right, we'll take a break. We're brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Matt, it's like I look outside, it even looks cold. I mean, it just looks that way. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. At the holiday party this year, you should have seen the suit moonwalk to this. I mean, it wasn't very fast, but he did it.
I would pay money to see that.
It's the difference between you and me. I wouldn't pay money to see him do anything. I love the guy. He is the perfect foil because he's a great guy. He is. He really is. Did you see that the Steelers have hired Matt Canada?
Yes, I did see that earlier.
I mean, if I'm the Steelers, with all due respect to Matt Canada, okay, and he's going to be the quarterback's coach. And he did a heck of a job, by the way, at Maryland as the interim head coach. I thought he did very well there. But have you seen how many places, you know how many games I've done in my career where Matt Canada was on the other sideline? Hey, they're playing Maryland. That's Matt Canada. Oh, they're playing Wisconsin. Oh, Matt Canada. Oh, they're playing Indiana. Oh, Matt Canada. If I were the Steelers, I'd keep the resumes handy to see if Matt stays there more than a year. Oh, my goodness. You want to talk about moving around? Now, he couldn't help about moving the last time. I mean, he went to specifically to, you know, Maryland and didn't think he was going to be the head coach or the interim head coach. Yeah, Indiana, Wisconsin, NC State, Pitt. That's right. I forgot about the Pitt one. So Penn State has faced Matt Canada at four different places. Four different places. Indiana. He stayed in Indiana for a while. He was there from 2004 to 2010. So he was there for a while. But then he was at Wisconsin for 1 year. Then he was at Pitt 1 year. Then he went to LSU for a year. Then he went to Maryland for a year. Then was out of the game for a year. I'll be honest with you. I thought he did a very good job at Maryland last year with all the circumstances. I thought he did a great job of holding them together. But the guy knows how to coach, believe me. And there are a lot of people out there at many organizations that feel he can coach too because he's coached almost everywhere. Well, he's with the Steelers now, and you know what? The guy knows what he's doing. He'll do a good job there. They said the same thing about Larry Brown, too.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Now we got rid of Matt Brooks running the show, and now we're doing great. All right, so let's... Drew Pearson, by the way, says he's disappointed at the Hall of Fame, the fact that he did not get into the Centennial class, but he remains hopeful his time will come. He says, this is going to stick with me until later today, and after all these texts and internet stuff stops coming through, I'll move on. This is the story of my life. He said, nothing has ever come easy. I came here as an undrafted free agent. I had a bone disease as a kid, went to Tulsa, had three losing seasons in 4 years, three head coaches in 4 years, on probation 3 years, not getting drafted, signed for $150, made the team, overcame the odds with 100 rookies in camp, then turning that opportunity after making it.
I made All-Pro my second year and over 1,000 yards my second year. Said, it's like that Robert Frost poem. I've taken the road less traveled. My career has always been about the road less traveled. I am a firm believer, especially when you look at the makeup of the Centennial class, that Drew Pearson is a Hall of Famer. And I thought Drew Pearson was just one of those guys that, you know, you just felt like he was always making big plays in games. And it would be, for example, there are five guys going into the Hall of Fame on February 1st. That's a different ballot than this ballot. But do I think Drew Pearson is a Hall of Famer? Yes, I do. I think his problem ends up being the numbers problem. Because you can only elect five, and every time a new year rolls around, there's somebody eligible for the first time. Troy Polamalu, for example, this time. You're not going to leapfrog a first-time Hall of Famer. You're not going to do that. I hope at some point he gets it, because I think he deserves it. I thought Drew Pearson was not just a good player. I thought he was consistently a great player. He wasn't just consistently a good player. I thought he was consistently a great player. But you're nitpicking a little bit over, because there's nobody in this list. I would not exclude anybody from this list saying he should be in instead of somebody else. I just think he should be in. I thought this committee did a good job. You know, the question to me is not Drew Pearson, whom I think should be in, as I said, but at the same time, my question would be, when you look at Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson, who, yes, deserve to be in, does their election, though, to me, open the door to others who probably should be in, who actually may have accomplished a little bit more, be in, may have done it over a longer period of time? I don't know. Because take, for example, Bill Cowher. Great coach, did a great job with the Steelers, kept them consistently good all the time. Won the one Super Bowl, awesome. Lost another one where his team was not the favorite. Okay, his team, when they lost to the Cowboys, they weren't the favorite in that game. But they also lost a series of AFC Championship games over the years where they were the favorite in their own stadium. So, I mean, those are just things that, you know, you discuss and bring up. Does it mean he should not be a Hall of Famer? No. Bill Cowher is a Hall of Famer. But doesn't that bring up some other names that maybe should be in the Hall of Fame? Just something to discuss, something to think about. Players making decisions about what to do about the NFL. A.J. Epenesa has decided to leave Iowa. And he has put his name in. He should. Epenesa is going to be a good NFL rush end. It's time for him to go. Tristan Wirfs, the offensive tackle, has put his name in. He also should have done it because I think he is ready to make the next step. Interesting, at Alabama, as Najee Harris has decided to go back to Alabama. He rushed for 1,200 yards, 13 touchdowns this year. Najee Harris has decided to go back to Alabama. I know a lot of you have been wondering what is going to happen with Shaka Tony. I don't know yet. I haven't seen him, talk to him. I haven't been around the football building. And so I don't know. But again, you have, today's Wednesday? You have until Friday to put your name in. And then you have until Monday to make it final. So you have to put your name in by Friday, but then you have that grace period to make it final where you can take your name out or you just say, no, we're leaving our name in. Underclassmen, already three Alabama juniors have announced they're returning to school. They are Dylan Moses, linebacker, offensive lineman Alex Leatherwood, and wide receiver Devontae Smith. Tua Tagovailoa, offensive lineman Jedrick Wills, safety Xavier McKinney, and wide receivers Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs III of all said that they are leaving for the NFL.
I'm trying to see if there's actually a list so far. Now, the NFL will not put out an official list until this is done. NFL early entry list. There we go. So let's just take a NFL early entrance 2020. Okay. List of underclassmen declaring for draft. Okay. Now, this will be announced, by the way, on Monday. But this is the 24/7 Sports has been putting together a list of players who have announced that they are going early. Early entrants include Salvin Ahmed from Washington, the running back. Cam Akers from Florida State, a running back. Graylin Arnold, safety from Baylor. Let's just get to the ones that would be prominent in here that you, the average fan, would know. Tyler Bedez, the center from Wisconsin, has put his name in. Lynn Bowden from Kentucky put his name in. Quintez Cephas from Wisconsin, the wide receiver. Let's see. Obviously, you know about K.J. Hamler and Yetur Gross-Matos. They're both in. A.J. Dillon, the running back from Boston College. J.K. Dobbins, the running back from Ohio State. Jacob Eason, the quarterback from Washington. A.J. Epines, I just mentioned, from Iowa. Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. So the defensive end and offensive tackle. Jake Fromm, quarterback from Georgia. Let's see, there's Yetur's name there. There's K.J.'s name. Who else? T. Higgins, the wide receiver from Clemson. Announced after the game he's going. Tristan Jackson, the wide receiver from Syracuse. I mentioned Jerry Jeudy already. Tony Jones, the running back from Notre Dame. Literally flew right over that stadium on last night because we had to refuel in South Bend. Cole Kmet, the tight end from Notre Dame. CeeDee Lamb, wide out from Oklahoma. Javon Leak, the running back from Maryland. Alorm Lumar, the defensive end from Rutgers. Cole McDonald, quarterback from Hawaii. Anthony McFarland, running back from Maryland. Xavier McKinney, I mentioned, the safety from Alabama. Jeffrey Okuda, the corner from Ohio State. Donovan Peoples-Jones, the wide receiver from Michigan. Colby Parkinson, good tight end from Stanford, put his name in. Who else is in here? That would be Henry Ruggs. I mentioned him already. Cesar Ruiz, the center from Michigan, put his name in. Geno Stone, the safety from Iowa. He's a good player. I like Stone. Always have. DeAndre Swift, the running back from Georgia, Tua Tagovailoa. J.J. Taylor, running back from Arizona. Jonathan Taylor, the running back from Wisconsin, put his name in. Andrew Thomas, tackle from Georgia. Josh Uche, linebacker, but also going to be a really tough, hard-nosed defensive end. He always gave Penn State problems. He put his name in. Cody White, wide receiver, Michigan State, put his name in. Antoine Winfield, who plays here at Minnesota. He should. He's a good player. I like him. I mentioned Tristan Wirfs already. Torrin Young, the running back from Iowa. I'm surprised he put his name in. Chase Young, defensive end, Ohio State, put their names in. Let's see, returning to school. I mean, that's a returning to school. Now, these are the returnees. Baron Browning, the linebacker from Ohio State, returning. Nico Collins, wide receiver, Michigan, returning. Here's one. Now, everybody thought at the bowl game, DeMonte Coxey, the wide receiver from Memphis, everybody said he was going to the NFL. He's not. He's coming back. Let's see. Wyatt Davis, the guard from Ohio State, is a really good player, coming back. Sam Ellinger, Texas, coming back. Pat Freiermuth, of course, coming back. Damar Hamlin from Pitt, coming back. Najee Harris, Alabama, coming back. Let's see. Chuba Hubbard, the running back from Oklahoma State, coming back. Alex Leatherwood, I mentioned, from Alabama, coming back, the offensive tackle. Dylan Moses, linebacker, Alabama, coming back. Thayer Mumford from Ohio State, tackle, coming back. That's two big cogs. In fact, Josh Myers, the center, That's three primary cogs on that offensive line for Ohio State that are all coming back. Lorenzo Neal from Purdue coming back. He was hurt most of last year. Kwity Paye from Michigan, defensive end, coming back. Watt Fillier from Indiana coming back. A.J. Rose, running back, Kentucky, coming back. Let's see who else is on the return list here. Let's see. Sage Surratt, wide receiver, Wake Forest, coming back. C.J. Verdell, the running back from Oregon, coming back. Sean Wade, corner from Ohio State, coming back. You know, Michael Mennett coming back. Will Fries coming back. Pat Freiermuth coming back. All those guys on us are coming back. So that's the list to this point as to who has declared and who hasn't. And they have to do. They have to put their name in by Friday. The list gets announced Monday, but I think they have a period of time between Friday and Monday before the list is announced to, if they wish to, you know, make the commitment, stay in or withdraw. They can still do that. And this is the world of modern college football, where you look at who's entering the NFL draft, who's staying. You look at the transfer portal. Who's staying? And then you look at recruiting. And it is as tough as ever to be a coach, where you're trying to craft an 85-player roster, scholarship roster, and you recruited them once already. And now you got to find out whether they're staying with you or not, or whether they're going to transfer. Man, it's a hard way to live. And of course, and then there's this one. You'll love this one. All right, Quinn Nordin, who at one point lost his job this season as the kicker. Nordin has decided to return to Michigan for his senior season. You know, he kicked a 57-yard field goal in the Citrus Bowl. Look, I mean, the guy has a powerful leg, but he's inconsistent. I don't know. It's... I got to give Nordin credit. He has done a brilliant job as a kicker of making headlines. Doesn't have what you call a long list of game winners, but he gets a lot of publicity. We will come back with more in a moment and wrap it up from Minneapolis here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State basketball coming up tonight at Williams Arena, the old barn, opened in 1928. Minnesota is 9-7, but they're coming off an impressive win over Michigan on Sunday, and Daniel Arturo was outstanding. He scored 30 points and grabbed 7 boards, and Marcus Carr was outstanding with 21. They play 7 players, and Penn State's going to have to deal with Arturo inside. He can go left, he can go right. He has developed into a very good post player, and he's also developed into a good, not great, but a good post defender. Penn State has to deal with him. John Hara and Mike Watkins are going to have to try and get that job done tonight against him. And it's not as if Watkins can't be a tough handle. Watkins needs to make himself a tough handle for Arturo tonight. They don't have a great matchup for Lamar Stevens. Wheeler's going to have to do a really good job tonight on Carr. When Carr goes right, Carr is dynamic. He is a heavy right-handed player, but when he goes right, he's quick and he's got moves and he can pull up and he's got a jump step and the whole deal. If you want to get some control on him, you've got to do a good job of forcing him left. You just have to. Doesn't mean he can't score or have any level of effectiveness going left. But if you're going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, how effective is Marcus Carr when he goes right? Well, it's between 8 and 9. How effective is Marcus Carr going left? About 3 to 4. Right? It's a big difference. So they've got to do that. Gabe Kalscher is an outstanding 3-point shooter who's been very much up and down. They've got to keep him down tonight because he's been down of late. They've got to keep him down. The transfer from Drexel, Demir, is a smart, steady, no-nonsense player. He's a good player. Smart, steady, no-nonsense player. And Peyton Willis, the transfer from Vanderbilt, can be a good shooter. Again, he's been like Kalshi, has been a little bit up and down. He'll have a couple of games where he shoots it really well and a couple of games where he doesn't. And that will be tonight's game at 9 o'clock. I realize that when it is Penn State basketball, and you've always felt the margin of error was a certain amount, usually pretty small. Margin of error with this team is not as small. But they're also, as soon as they hit a bump in the road, there's a sky is falling mentality. Okay, I understand that. Your fans, you get that from time to time. But the players have to just not listen to that stuff. No offense, they don't need to listen to you. Okay, they need to listen to what they're supposed to do and just go out and do it. And Mike Watkins being present is an important element to this, because Myron Jones can shoot, and you have to get something out of your shooters. You need something out of your shooters. Corey Povis, who does the Twins, also does a lot of BTM basketball. I was talking to Corey today, and you know, after we're done talking about the Twins signing Josh Donaldson and so forth, how excited he is about that. We started talking about this team, and I was telling him, he said, well, you know, what happened against Rutgers and Wisconsin? I said, there's usually a list of things. I said, but there's a primary reason. Rutgers really tilted its defense and really chased the ball last Tuesday night. They chased it. Well, in the process of chasing the ball, that leaves open shooters, and Penn State didn't hit open shots. Okay. I said, against Wisconsin, Penn State took 21 threes. I said, 3 of them were either contested or just bad shots. All right. But the other 18 were all in the flow, the rhythm of the offense. I said, Corey, some of those were actually practice gym jumpers. They just didn't knock down. I said, when Jamari Wheeler hits 2, and Lamar Stevens hits 1, and Isaiah Brockington hits 1, you're thinking to yourself, I say, Corey, it's like it's bonus day at the ballpark. The problem was the 3 that you expect to hit some shots, Myron Jones, Curtis Jones, and Miles Dredd, I said, went 1 for 14. I said, my expectation for those 3 is that game in and game out, that the 3 of them combine to hit 5 or 6 in a given game. I said, I didn't say 8, 9, 10, 12 shots. No, no, no. I expect the three guys to combine for 5 or 6. They hit one. If they had combined to hit 5 against Wisconsin, Penn State would have won the game. And 5 is not an astronomical number. 5 is a reasonable, 5 or 6 is a reasonable number for three guys that you consider good shooters. They'll need that tonight here in the barn. It's at 9 o'clock on at 8:30. Great to be with you. We'll talk to you tomorrow back at the Sunbury Motors Studio.